can learn.
Great. And what does a day working in this program look like?
Well, what it looks like, it looks a little bit different than the school day and the after school. We have a few school day spots at Davis Elementary in Gresham, but we have lots of space in our after school program. So a tutor would come in to the school and be there a little bit before they have their first session, just to settle in, to kind of connect with students, to help settle down. You know, often they'll be finishing recess and snack, you know, get their wiggles out after they've been in school for a long time. And then they'll get a student and they'll sit down with them and they'll have a moment of connection, of check-in. Then they'll take out the books they're working on, so leveled readers that are specifically designed to meet the kids where they're at. They'll practice really hard on a couple of pages, reading until they're super fluent and they've practiced all that they've sort of learned, putting it together in that session. Then they'll check in about comprehension. They'll talk a little bit about how that went, and then they'll do a read aloud with the students. And wrap it all up, maybe have a little chat and a little check-in, and then they'll get their next student. And we anticipate tutors having somewhere between 2 and 4 matches that they'll work with one-on-one. So they would see all those students.
This is Mazaroth on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The nominating committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
It's time to pack your bags and join us for Camp KBOO. Make a summer of memories with KBOO and support grassroots media by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give to help us reach our $50,000 goal by June 29th. Thank you.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel. Rachel Haynes, my co-host, is not able to be with us today. Hopefully she'll be with us next time. We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. I am a public school teacher and host every second Monday of the month. We typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today, we have Enrique Ferreira. Welcome, Enrique.
Thank you, Stephen. Welcome and hello to all your audience.
Yeah, it's great to have you with us. And I think, and you've been on the show once before, and I was trying to remember what we talked about then. But today, we're really sort of devoted to talking about you and what you got going on. So, you are currently the vice president of the Oregon Education Association, OEA, and the president-elect, so you will soon be taking that over that position. You become president in a little over a month. Would you start by telling our listeners about your union journey, what your first union job was, and how you first got involved in the union?
Yes, Stephen, welcome. My first union job was building rep. It was a awesome job that you get to advocate for your members at the building level, You help them with understanding the contract, but also you attend local union meetings. You attend the executive board, and you pass the message of to the leadership of the needs of the members and the concerns or what's going on and the positives as well. And also you help with bargaining.
And what about, now that wasn't actually your job. I think that was how you first got involved in the union. So what was your job at the time when you got involved?
Oh, I was an academic advisor at Clackamas Community College outside of Portland. So that's my first job, right, professionally in the education field.
Yeah. And when you went into that, were you thinking that, huh, this is good, this is a union job, or was that sort of a secondary thing that you hadn't really thought about before? I'm curious about, what made you decide that you wanted to be a building rep?
Well, you know, my first part, you know, I went through Portland State University, went through, you know, my bachelor's and my master's, and I had an awesome advisor. And at that time, I was in the Marines, and, you know, life puts you in a different path sometimes. And that advisor and others were like, well, maybe you should try advising in one of the colleges around the city. But one of them also said, and as soon as you can, get involved in your union. That was my advisor in graduate school, Ramin Farmanpur, an education professional himself, but also a union leader. So then when I got to the college, Clackamas, within the first 8-9 months, I was able to join the building rep role. Basically, my building needed a representative, and they're like, well, Enrique's the new guy, maybe you should take that role so we can help him understand how the college works. So like most union jobs, you are voluntold or you volunteer in a very surprising way at times. Like I was at a meeting, and when I came back from that meeting, the advising group there and others were like, hey, we think you should be a building rep for the building for us. And then, you know, a couple of years later, I became local president.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, that does seem to be oftentimes the way that we get involved, is somebody asks us to do it. Yeah. So speaking of sort of going back in time a bit, I think that your life story is pretty amazing, although it's not that uncommon, but it's certainly a different life story than mine. Can you talk about that some? Talk about your early years and your family and growing up, where you're coming from, what your roots are.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was born in Mexico. My mom, like many mothers and family members, my mother decided to immigrate for a better life for myself and my sisters. So she immigrated to San Diego, California. And then we grew up in a very humble home. My mom cleaned houses for the rich people in La Jolla, California, and also in other parts of San Diego County. And like many immigrants, she became an entrepreneur. She opened her own small cleaning building business. And I graduated high school and attended community college in San Diego and continued to help my mother and help with my sisters. And I did many different type of jobs, right? Like anybody who is in a low economic status, or just like any other immigrant family, any job that helped pay the bills would be helpful to take on. And then I became a parent at a young age. Well, I would say a young age, but many people think that's normal. 24 years old, 24, and started to pick up more jobs, right? And I was going to school at the same time, taking one class at a time. And I was undocumented for that period of time. And at that time, you couldn't drive, and I say in air quotes, legally, right? Because of the laws. So I bussed around everywhere, actually, because I was afraid of driving. Even to school, I had to take the an hour and a half bus drive just to go to school. Working evenings. So that was part of my journey, and then moved to Oregon,
And if you were to sort of reflect on that, how do you, or what are some of the ways that you think that might impact you as a union leader today, that life story, that background that you have?
That's a really good question, Stephen. And I think at the core for me, and I didn't know this at that particular time, or I didn't have the understanding the way I do now, but I know that at that time, for me growing up, I got to see poor black kids, poor Asian kids, poor white kids, kids from the city who were bused to my high school. Poverty was something that I grew up seeing, and then you go and work at these huge fancy homes, and also very nice buildings where doctors and engineers work, and corporate people. So you will see the contrast, and that made me feel like, well, I mean, these people are nice, meaning people with money, people with a lot of success. And I also noticed that my friends and the family was around who had little to nothing were also nice, and they were happy. So that made me feel like, well, why don't we all have the same sort of level of access, or the same level of, wealth or rights? Because, I would bus to some of those places to work, but at the same time, I would see the kids of those individuals, and they would have cars, and cell phones were not a thing back in the day at that time, but they had other things that they would, like study abroad trips. Or they I remember one time in senior on my senior year, where I was helping my mom clean this beautiful home, the family was sort of like talking about, well, our daughter's going to go to Italy and for college, and they're going to do a tour of the schools and back east, and then go to Italy for their study abroad, sort of like scouting programs, which there's nothing wrong with that. But for me, that was such a foreign world, right? And what really hit me was like, all the people that I know are working really hard. Like, we're working really hard, and we don't even have the level of understanding what this means, And so for me, that allowed me to think about, there's got to be a better way to make this world and more equitable for people like me, and people who are in my neighborhood, right? For example, in my neighborhood, not too far from my high school, the Border Patrol will used to park their cars about 2 blocks away, or maybe hang out around the neighborhood just to intimidate people or to pull them over. Or and the neighborhood would come together, like, hey, don't go over there because La Migra's over there, the Border Patrol's over there. But that didn't happen in the rich neighborhoods that we clean homes and
No.
buildings. For me, when I was doing that work, it influenced my union perspective down the road. I was like, wait a minute, we can all have wealth that is equal or similar to, meaning access to education, access to healthcare, be able to drive without being fearful of being pulled over just because you just look brown, not because you're breaking the law, or just be able to get across the street or cross the street without fear. So that job made me really humble but very ambitious, in the sense of like, we can do better, and I gotta do better for myself and for my sisters and for my future self.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us, you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. Unlike corporate media, KBOO is commercial-free and relies on you, the listener, to function and survive on the air as a community radio station. So please, if you are able, go to kboo.fm/give to make a one-time donation. Or better yet, become a monthly donor. So, Enrique, what's it been like being the vice president of a union of over 40,000 educators? What have you, maybe start by, what have you most enjoyed?
Just learning about so many different aspects of the union movement that exists within a union. That's been exciting. The other piece that's been really exciting is you get to meet people who crave the same level of equality, which I was sort of describing earlier, like this, like we want all have access to quality education. We want all access for healthcare for everybody within the union, outside the union. So that has been really exciting because I'm like, oh, I'm not the only one. There's other people like me who think like me. And that's been very exciting.
Yeah. And on the flip side, what have been some of the challenges?
Well, that's one of the challenges I see in the labor movement, not only here in Oregon, but I think across the country and maybe around the world. But in my own lens, I feel and I see that the labor movement for quite some time sort of lost their track of like, labor is for climate change, fight corporate greed. Labor is about access to education for all, healthcare. Labor is fighting for immigrant rights and fighting for LGBTQ rights. And labor is engage in political action to elect leaders that are pro-labor. So at times, I feel that the labor movement sort of that became sort of a talking point, but they were more focused on, oh, we're a profession, or we are professionals of a labor movement that, reflects my professional needs, not the needs of the community. And I've always been focused on community because how I grew up goes back to your first question. I believe there's a greater power that helps the middle class, people with low income, and that's the labor movement. I mean, the farm workers or other professions that have benefited or have pushed agenda to help fight discrimination and has allowed our nation in the United States to have civil rights. It was the labor movement with other leaders. So for me, it has been challenging to understand. I think we got too comfortable, right? And I think we when we talk about community, many different people have a different definition of that, and other people have a very different definition of what the labor movement is. And so I believe you got to go back to the roots of how the labor movement started. And I'm not talking about being militant. I'm talking about being a community partner, being with the community and all the social issues, and but also part of our professional field, which is education, being advocates for the education field as well, and work with partners across the labor movement with other unions, AFD, ACIU, ask me, you know, that's, I think that's what we got to do more of. And I think the union move has started to shift that in different ways. And I think one of the reasons is because of Trump administration and the first Trump administration. And now, as you see in the news, they're starting to do ICE raids. They're starting to becoming more aggressive, attacking U.S. citizens, right? Who had nothing to do with breaking the law. They're just being arrested because they have different political views, or they're starting to be more punitive for those people who have different point of view with the current administration. So I think there's a place for the union there, and I think that's what's been happening. The union movement has become more active in that sort of role. I think we can do more, but I see the union movement being part of that.
Right. Well, you have a 2-year term as president and could possibly serve one additional 2-year term. So at least 2 years and possibly 4 years as president. What are your top one or two goals for OEA?
Well, one of them is to increase our political organizing, political fundraising activities, meaning that we have to be able to get out and vote. We have to be able to engage in organizing communities to help them elect pro public education school boards. And talk about a reform on corporate tax in Oregon, and also talk about how we as Oregonians can have an equitable tax system and revenue stream that will help the state provide the services that students, public services such as cities, counties need. I think we can do a lot more. I think having strong partnerships with other unions in the state and business in the business community as well. You have to have the business community in that conversation. And if government officials want to be part of that conversation, I'm more than happy to have that. But that takes a huge lift, as you know, Stephen. My goal is to build the foundation for something to be able to continue. It's a long-term project. And my goal is also to bring awareness of higher education and the BIPOC community within the state, but within the union movement, and wraparound services. So for example, we have social workers, nurses, we have counselors who are working under a lot of stress, just like our teachers and license members. But that's not often the conversation that we're having in the news or in community rallies. I think those voices need to be part of the center of the conversation as well. And we have to do it differently because they're part of the union movement and they're part of the educational system. So rebuild or propose a tax bracket that's different, increase revenue for the state, and bring a different communication that engages other parts of the union membership with the community. And it's just to build a foundation for something bigger. This project is a long-term project. And if the members give me the opportunity to become their president after the re-election, then we can execute some of those long-term projects and work with educators across the board, across the state, and public employees.
Sounds good. What do you think the role of a president of a large union should be. I feel like different people feel like the role is different. What, how would you define the role for you and maybe distinguish you from other presidents?
That's a great question. So I believe the president is not a micromanager or a manager of an organization, right? We have dedicated staff who do that. I think the role of the president is to set a vision, set an agenda, and bring people together and move forward with that idea. The role of the president is to meet with the members, travel and see the members, listen to the members, and try to provide a fix to that issue or to that system that, in many cases, is not allowing the educator or the union member to be heard or to continue that problem. I think the role of the president is to be able to have conversations with community leaders and legislators and business people to be able to have dialogue on how we can change the educational system so we have a strong economy, so we can have a strong educational system. I don't believe a union president of a large state or any local or state should be there just spending most of their time answering emails. That's not how you learn about the problems. That's not how you fix the problems. I believe the president is just like the head of state, right? You have to attend the issues, but build a team around you to help you solve those issues. And but also talk about all the positive things the union is doing for the community, for the members. We often hear, oh, they're doing this or no. The first question is, tell me what is that you feel so proud about your contract, or tell me why you feel proud of being a union member. Just let's raise that awareness of like, hey, we have a lot of wins in the organization at the local level, at the state level, and also at the national level. So talk about the union in a very different perspective than is commonly known, or help people understand that that's not what unions do, just deal with problems. There's a lot of positive of being a union member and being involved in a union.
Great. Well, my last question is, how do you think you'll be different from previous OEA presidents? Or if it's easier to answer it this way, what do you want your legacy to be as OEA president? How do you want to be remembered?
Well, I am already different. First of all, I'm a bilingual president-elect and I'm a person of color. In the history of our organization, I'm the third person of color. The other piece is that I don't come from the teaching ranks. I'm from a classified member, non-teacher, from a community college, from higher ed. It's the first time in our organization that has ever happened. My legacy, and I think this is part of my legacy now as current vice president, we help the organization be in a very, very solid and strong financial grounds. And also, the other piece is that we have been able to make changes in the system for a stronger organizing model that is the future. Anybody who thinks that professional services is where we need to be, it needs to take a step back and look at the movement across the nation, what's happening. And I'm not saying that professional services or they're not relevant. No, I think they are very relevant, but we have to do it differently. As president, I want my legacy to be that someone who was able to change the current model of we are going to maintain the status quo. Because society is demanding that, and the members. And by that mean, I mean by that is that we need to have the difficult conversations about revenue and how the educational system needs to work for everybody, not just for the kids who live in the affluent neighborhoods. We need to have this conversation as a union group. My other piece is that I would like to be remembered as to somebody who coalesce around really good people who help me be in this role. And that's part of my legacy, that you can bring people, especially BIPOC people, who in the past had a tokenized voice, I guess, in some perspectives. But this is where they have a different voice in their organization. So, I would love to be remembered as someone who attempted or built a foundation to corporate tax reform in Oregon and a revenue campaign to change the revenue stream, and also somebody who is bringing the voices of those union members who are often not heard or understood, meaning classified members, ESPs, community colleges, and wraparound services, and along with being educator of color. I think that would of in itself would be, I would consider a success. It's not easy, as you know. Majority of our members are white, and they don't have the same background as I do. And when I do my speeches, I try to add Spanish to it so people get used to, or they know that people are different and the union is different, and everybody in the union should be welcome, should feel supported.
Well, thank you, Enrique, for joining us on KBOO. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. This is Steven Siegel. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 to catch another Labor Radio show.